Boy, can I help you?
Listen up. I'm bringing you the best content to ever exist in the door-to-door industry, from sales, leadership, recruiting, and personal development.
Well, why would I need that?
Because never before have we been able to collaborate with the top experts in their industries, sharing their secrets and techniques on what makes them the best.
Wait, who are you?
I'm your host, Sam Taggart, creator of the DDD Experts and DDD Con. Is there a place we can sit down?
Well, come on in.
Vanilla is the fastest way to increase your Google and Facebook reviews through text. With a 98% open rate, Vanilla Reviews is the simplest, cheapest way to interact and engage with customers. Visit us at vanillagood.com for more information.
Hi, everyone. This is Sam Taggart with the DDD Podcast, and I'm here with Ian Koniak, who over the last 2 years was the number one sales rep at Salesforce. They're, you know, one of the largest software companies in the world, and this year is projected to do $15 billion in revenue. So they're the number one company to work for, and he was the number one sales rep. So a little different than knocking on doors to sell pest control, a little bit different than, you know, your typical solar sale. But what's so powerful is sales, and he knocked doors because he was actually a director of sales of a $60 million B2B copier company. So selling copiers, right, business to business, knocking on door to door to door. So there's a lot that he can relate to in our tribe. There's a lot that he has to give. And I think that cross-contextual, bringing in the software sales, bringing in the B2B sales, is something that can give insight to the sophistication of how we run our business. So super excited to have you on the show, Ian, and excited to jam today.
Great to be here, Sam. Thanks for having me.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into the copier business. Like, I literally just bought a new printer. So tell me, you know, this one, look, I'm like sitting here right next to it. I mean, I'm going to turn my computer so you can see my sweet new printer. It's definitely a Canon.
It's beautiful. I got one myself too. It's right over here.
Yeah, I was like, we're all sitting printers and copiers. So
everybody needs them. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, so you go business, like, tell me a little bit about that business, because that's quite interesting.
Yeah, so I got into the copier business. I never knew I was going to sell copiers. I wasn't planning to. I actually didn't know what I wanted to do. I was in college. I went to school up at Berkeley. And really, after college, I just wanted to continue traveling and exploring. I had studied abroad in Australia, and so I became a teacher in Venezuela. And when I was a teacher there, I know. So, hablo un poquito, pero no practico mucho.
Oh, okay.
It's minimal. Like, what you don't practice, you forget. So, including lessons in sales. But for the sake of time, I was there for a year. I was teaching English, traveling, wanted to be a photojournalist, and ended up falling in love with one of my students. And don't worry, they were adult students, so nothing crazy there.
You're one of those.
Yes, I was. I was 22. She was 18. So
starstruck.
That's right. So, like, literally, I my visa was expiring, and I came back to the U.S. and I couldn't be with this woman who I truly loved. And you know, we talked about it, and we wanted to continue the relationship. And the only way that I was going to continue the relationship is if I was able to bring her from South America, put her through college, because the only visas that they were giving out were student visas, and support her and basically, you know, live on both of our own and put her through college. So I was at a career fair in LA, and I'm like, you know, what do I want to do? I studied psychology. I don't have any experience. And I remember there was a copier company there. It was called Lanier at the time. Now it's called Ricoh. And they basically had a flyer that it said, and this was in 2001, so money's a little different then, but they said first year, 50,000, second year, 75,000, third year, 100,000 plus. I'm like, well, great. I'm going to live with my parents for my first year when I'm coming back from Venezuela to save money. If I save 50,000, I should be able to pay for school, which is I think it was like 15 grand or something. And, you know, sure enough, I asked them, I said, what do you got to do to be successful and to make this kind of money? And they said, you just listen to us, you follow what we say, we will promise you that you'll get this income. So I didn't really know I was selling copiers. It just happened to be the product or the vessel that I got into. And sure enough, you know, I ended up being there for 10 years, and, you know, that's where I cut my teeth and started my career.
I love it. I love it. So what were some of the main skill sets that you feel like you developed, you know, going B2B, selling copiers?
Yeah, I think number one is just tenacity, right? I think like I talk to a lot of people and in and out of sales, and, you know, some of the common threads that I find is, you know, the most successful people just do not give up. They are completely committed to whatever goal they have. And for me, because I didn't have the experience, I wasn't polished yet. It was truly a numbers game, an activity game. So similar kind of to the D2D space, I was told if you go out and you cold call 20 doors a day, right? Minimum 20 doors, you're going to set 2 appointments a day. It's about a 10% ratio. And if you set 2 appointments a day, right, you're going to have 10 appointments a week. And of those 10 appointments, you're going to have 4 people that want to actually see numbers, get a proposal. And of those 4, you're going to close one of them. So if you do 20 cold calls a day, you will get 1 sale. Essentially, it's 1%. So because I didn't have the skill, because I didn't know what I was doing, I purely relied on the numbers. And I was just going literally door to door. And they gave me Koreatown. Now, I'm a Jewish kid out of Los Angeles. And these are first generation Koreans. And they were slamming the door in my face. So, I mean, it truly was dealing with rejection all day. And when they say, like, the number one lesson in sales that I can share is you've got to cut your teeth somewhere. You've got to get the experience. You've got to get the reps. You've got to get the practice. And that's probably above all. There are a lot of skills, you know, from closing to presenting to prospecting to, you know, how you run an appointment, how you relate to people. But the most important skill I would say is just developing really thick skin and a belief in myself by committing to the activity and just grinding it every single day. And that grind to this day has served me because it's like embedded in me. And there's, in software, there's just not as many people that grind as much. And I still have that hustle I can turn on anytime. And it really does come in handy no matter what I'm doing.
I love it. I love it. So you've transitioned over to Salesforce and worked your way up the ladder and now are obviously top performer there, did over $10 million in sales in 2 years, which is insane. I can't even fathom that in a software setting. You've closed companies like Berkshire Hathaway and some other big names that a lot of us know. And what do you feel like the similarities to knocking on business to business and copiers to other sales to, you know, knocking on freaking Warren Buffett's door? Like,
I've never met Warren Buffett, but you're right. I do sell to multi-billion-dollar companies. And, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, believe it or not, right? Some of the most successful people, this is why I wanted to be on your show, is because I believe, you know, the skills that the D2D world and your audience is developing are transferable to the B2B world and are transferable to the software world. And whatever people develop, it's going to be carried with them for life, no matter what they do. So a lot of the same skills, I would say, are number one is prospecting, right? Nobody, regardless, Salesforce is a great company. It's very well known, but no one's knocking at my door saying, I want to buy software. That just doesn't happen. So what I have to do is identify who are the key executives in each of my accounts that I need to talk to. And we don't just sell to one department. We don't just sell to sales. We sell to the service department, the marketing department, the e-commerce department. We sell to IT. We sell to pretty much anyone who's engaging with employees or external customers. And so being able in the copier world, I had to plan out my territory. I had to know which buildings I was going to go to, which areas, what type of companies, and I'd have to execute the plan. It's the exact same thing in software where I only have a few accounts, but there's probably 20, 30 people in each of my accounts that I need to be in touch with. And every day there's distractions, there's things that come up, that's busy work, that's email, there's admin tasks. And, you know, that skill of like, what's the most important thing I need to be doing today to reach my clients and who do I need to be talking to? It is very much universal across sales, right? Because it's so easy to like fool yourself into thinking you're busy. But the reality is that if you're not either setting appointments or doing appointments, you're not doing the two most critical things in the sales world. So I would just say that same planning and execution of prospecting is super transferable. I'd say the second thing is just closing, right? So when you're closing a copier sale, you know, you think, oh, the printer you showed me and the one I showed you, these are, you know, a few hundred bucks at Staples or whatever. That's not what I was selling. I was selling the big stand-up machines that are as big as you and me are, or sometimes that take up a whole wall. They could range between 5,000 and 100,000 for one machine. So we were leasing them. And the reality is, in order to position a copier, I wasn't just going door to door and saying, hey, I got this great machine. You want to buy it? Or, you know, hey, you know, can I help you with switching out your copiers? That's not how I sold. I sold with doing a lot of discovery up front, understanding what they were using today, how much it was costing today, how it was working, why, you know, they had so many devices when they can use a multifunction device, just really understanding who are the decision makers, right? So that skill of like really doing deep discovery is still the same in software. I'm asking different kind of questions. I'm asking more, I would say, powerful, impactful questions than just like related to printing and the finance. But the skill of like truly understanding your customer and truly trying to help them with what you propose before you go into your pitch or your solution, I think is very much also universal to scale. So those are two that kind of transferred over that I still use to this day.
I love it. And I love that you said, you know, I think it's so funny. We think, oh, selling multi-billion dollar companies, it's going to be different than it's the amount of appointments you're setting and the amount of demos you're giving. Like it yep. straight up comes to this. It straight up comes to yep. what are the key things that make us money and how do we eliminate all the other things that take us away from that and just do more of those, you know, more demos, more appointments gets us more dollars. So talk to me about how you manage your time. You know, you have a team of kind of a sales group that's attacking these businesses, but like, how do you manage your time as a sales individual?
Yeah, I love just a couple things. What you just said hit the nail. It's activity yields pipeline yields results. If you don't get anything from this podcast, take that away. Activity yields pipeline yields results. It's all about kind of the front end activity to build that pipe. And eventually the pipe's got to go somewhere. It's got to spill somewhere either out or into your, you know, into your wallet. Right. So it's so true and it's so applicable. Now, once you get a lot of pipeline, it does come down to time management. Right. So today versus how I used to do it are very different. Right. So today I think one of the, it's a challenge, man. I'm not going to lie. I'm somebody who sometimes the day can overtake me. So I've been really focused on prioritizing. There's a book I just bought called The One Thing. And it's really the thesis of the book is it's written by Gary Keller. The thesis of the book is make the one thing, the one thing. Like what is the most important thing that I need to get done today? And that kind of takes my calendar and blocks it. So what I try to do in the beginning of the day, and you'll see it behind me, I got a whiteboard. And on the left side of the whiteboard is like the top things. There's the work tasks that I have, right? Which is like, here's the stuff I just need to do. And I have a little marker and I'll just put it on what I'm working on at that moment. And then I have pretty severe ADD. I used to be on Adderall. I stopped it because I didn't like how it made me feel. But for me, it's like, can I lead myself in this area? Can I be most efficient with my time? And it's so powerful to like see the improvements that I'm making through just having a system to organize. So my system is really my work tasks. I say, what are the most beginning of each day? What are the most important thing? What's the one thing I need to get done? And then what are all the kind of things after that? And I'll take that white space in my calendar and I'll block it off. Right. And the right side of my tasks are the follow-up, right? The key people that I need to follow up with. Because I'm sure your audience, you know, you knock doors and someone says, call me back next week. Well, if you don't call those people, what's the point of knocking the doors? What's the point of getting them in your pipeline? You need to make time for follow-up. So I'll have every day blocking for like the tasks I need to do. And then I have the critical, important things. And then I have usually an hour or 2 hours for pure follow-up on my opportunities, on tasks that need to be important. And that's like the most important thing. It's like if you have deals and you're not closing the loops, if you're not moving them forward, then you're just missing the boat. It's like you're going to spend all your time prospecting on the front end. So it's all about prioritizing and planning your day up front. Take 5, 10, 15 minutes in the beginning of the day or the night before, ideally, if you can discipline yourself to that, to say, here's what my day is going to look like. And, Yeah, there you go. You got your D2D planner. I love it.
Exactly.
I love it.
I'm literally holding my D2D planner right now.
Yeah.
And I wrote this book simply because I was so, like, I was like you. I have ADD. And if I don't take 10 minutes and early on in the day to write out my three battles and write out my, you know, my three S's and my mindset and my to-dos and, you know, prioritize, like, dude, we get lost in the weeds quick. So I'm glad that you're, like, jamming on this. And I was like, wait a minute. I'm writing on my planner I wrote right now.
Yeah. It's so true. And it's honestly, it's still a struggle, right? It's not something that you can get better at this. Even if sometimes you put in the time for the day, that doesn't mean you're not going to take a phone call. You're not going to get distracted. You're not going to go in the house or do something else. So it's like, it's set the plan and then stick to the plan. Stick to what, honor your time, honor your commitment. That's how you build trust with yourself, is when you say, I'm going to do these things and I actually stick to doing what I say I'm going to do, right? So yeah, prioritize, plan, and persist, execute, and keep the plan. It's so important.
I love it. So now I want to talk about prospecting a little bit, like the actual way of finding, because, you know, we talk about these different buckets. You know, one of the ones that I struggle is closing a loop. Just because of my wealth dynamic, you know, we both have taken that test. What are you?
I'm a supporter.
Supporter. Okay, that's the, I was going to say, you're probably over on the Dynamo or the Blaze, one of those two. Anyway, those.
Hi, Blaze, brother.
Yeah, I was going to say, those that don't know what we're talking about. So Ian and I go way back. You know, we've done different masterminds together. And there's a test called this wealth dynamics test. And there's different dynamics and geniuses that we all have. And a lot of salespeople fall in the Blaze and Dynamo stage. We like to start things, we don't like to finish them. And so it's funny how you mentioned, you know, closing the loops. It's like you're good at, like, you know, creating and making sure that everybody's happy, but like finishing and tying a bow on it is something that we all usually struggle with as salespeople. And, you know, I'm glad that you said that, like, hey, look, take some time and plan for that, because that's some of your most important, you know, important part of your days, because this could apply to anybody selling anything. I mean, it's so funny because we look at it and we're like, well, you're B2B. Maybe some of your sales cycles take a year to close a deal, but at the same time, it applies to the same thing of a follow-up with a referral or a touch point of a deal that said, I'm not interested, but call me back in 2 weeks. Or, you know what I mean? We deal with that all the stinking time. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. But I want to kind of shift over into, like, you know, the actual prospecting side of things, seeking, you know, I'm writing a book, and this morning I kind of really outlined it, and it has to do around with the scripture, you know, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be open. And that's the whole theme of my book. And so this section of seek, it's interesting because you're a master seeker, because you're dealing with billion-dollar companies, and you have to seek your way and prospect your way into the right departments and the right people. I guess, what are some hacks that you found through your career with the, you know, B2B or whatever, finding the right prospects and making sure you're spending the right time with the right people?
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind is it's this phrase: never take no from somebody who can't say yes. And that kind of has stuck with me, right? If they can't authorize it, how are they going to tell you no on it? So it's one of those things that's kind of like always sat with me. It's like, okay, well, can you sign off on this thing? Are you responsible for what we're talking about? And a lot of people just, like, inherently say no because they, you know, they see a salesperson or they put up their guard. But the reality is that if you believe in your heart and in your mind and in your soul that you truly can help somebody, and you hear a no, And then you pry a little deeper when you ask some questions. You know, a lot of times the people who are saying no are not necessarily the people that care or are even authorities in terms of what you're providing. So for me, it's like, who am I talking to? That's really, you know, one of the most important things, is make sure you're talking to people who care. And how do you know if they care? You ask powerful questions, right? You ask powerful questions. If I'm going into a large business and I'm talking to a person and I'm, you know, let's just call it a video game company. I won't name names, but I have the world's largest video game publisher as a client. And I'm asking them about the fan experience. I'm asking them about, is it important to you that you know fans across all games? Let's say they make 20 games and the player's playing one game here and then one game here and one game here, but in their systems, they're all basically different records of that same fan. And I ask someone at the executive level, is it important that you know who your fan is so you can understand their lifetime value and how they migrate from one game to another, and so that you can engage with them in a really personalized level and send marketing that's going to resonate with them and drive revenue and grow their customer lifetime value? Because that's what I sell. I sell software that helps people connect to their customers. And they say, no, I don't care about that. I care about my game. I care about what they're doing in my game because that's my department, my revenue. Yet I'm selling a software that spans across the all departments. Then I'm talking to the wrong person, right? And then I'll dive in. Okay, let's talk about what you care about. What is important to you? So I think, you know, you just need to know your audience, right? A lot of people in corporate America and big business, they have kind of their swim lane, right? They're playing it. They have their business, they have their employees, they have their KPIs in terms of how they're measured. And, you know, then there's the executive staff that cares about the whole thing. They care about how the departments flow together. They care about the overall employee experience. They care about the customer experience across all touch points, sales, service, marketing, right? Those are the people that I want to talk to when I'm selling software. I want the people that are in charge of the entire company, that care about the bottom line of the company, that care about the customer retention, that care about the revenue growth. The bottom line is, the higher you go in an organization, the more people care about the bigger problem. So the way and the hack that I've, you know, kind of developed in getting to these people is, you got to do your research, right? So the companies that I work with, obviously they all have websites. When you go to the websites, they all have a leadership team. If you go to the leadership team and you Google that person, that name, and just go to the news, a lot of times they're in the news, right? They're talking about what's important to them. They're talking about what their biggest challenges are. They're talking about where their vision of the company is. So you research the person that you're targeting. You understand what's important to them before you ever reach out. And then when you reach out, you say, hey, I read your article right here. I noticed that you're focusing on, you know, expanding to mobile, for example, for your video games, the same example. I'd love to talk to you about how our platform can enable you to reach customers in a mobile world that historically, you know, you haven't been targeting. Do you have 15 minutes? Some of our other gaming companies have been able to successfully do this, and I'd love to, you know, share how we can help, right? So the key is, you know who the people are, that the decision makers up front, you know, however you can prospect, LinkedIn, their website, you know, spend that time up front understanding, you know, who the power is at the organization, what they're saying. And then when you craft your message, your ratio, your effectiveness on prospecting is going to be so much greater. Second tip is, use a customer story, right? Before you go in there, know how you've helped a similar customer do what you're trying to pitch to them, right? And then the third thing is just, again, use all channels, right? So it's not just make a phone call. It's not just send a LinkedIn message. It's not just stop by their office and ask for them. It's not just go to the conference. It's all of them. It's find out where these people are, find out who you know that's connected with them, and you know, just keep going at it. Because odds are they may not check your email if you email them. They may not check their voicemail. The assistant may not give them a message. So you have to track them down at their conference that they're at, if they're, you know, where they're speaking. You need to read their book or look at their, I mean, it sounds really easy, but it takes planning, it takes persistence, it takes belief in that you really can help these people. And the minute you finally get them, you know, your energy is going to be so powerful because you worked so hard to get there. So these are all things, by the way, I mean, I know I'm talking kind of in the software realm, but these are all things we did in copiers too. When I went door to door in copiers, I always said, hey, I work with this, your neighbor right there. They're on the fourth floor and they just were able to save $150 a month on their copier lease bill every month, and they got better equipment. You want to go take a look at what they're doing or talk to them, right? So I always use proximity and customer references in my initial pitch. And ultimately, it's about making sure when you're prospecting that what you're telling them resonates, right? That you can develop a pitch that is going to stick with them, right? So it's planning, it's research, and then it's perfecting your pitch so that why would they say no, right? If you're going to help them save money or make money or save time or solve a problem, like, you know, why wouldn't they want to talk to you? So I think it's like how you perceive what you do as well, and kind of showing up with that conviction that you can really help people. I know it's a very long answer, but those are all kind of hacks that you can do to really be effective with prospecting.
No, I love that. I love that. And I think that kind of segues me into the next question, is kind of like, what's your sales process? Like, what's the process you kind of follow? Because I think every good salesperson has a process? And I'm curious to hear, you know, this is obviously like kind of one of your prospecting, you know, part ones, but now that you've met him, where do you go from there? Do you have kind of a sales process?
Yeah, at Salesforce, we certainly do, right? So I think once they say, sure, how can you help, right? Yeah. For us, and I want this to be relatable to your audience, because in software sales, it is a much longer sales cycle. It could be 6 months, right? So for us, our process is really understanding the pain and understanding their vision, right? So if you've, there's a lot of books on this. Spin Selling is one of my favorites, but Spin Selling is all about why do people make a change in general? Why do people change? And it's because the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing. That's when change occurs, because change is painful, especially when you're rolling out a new software program. So for us, a lot of our process is really understanding that discovery. So what is their vision? It's asking really powerful questions that can get them to tap into their emotion of why they make a change. So what is their vision for the company? Where do they want to be in 2-3 years? And then, okay, what does it look like today? What is keeping them up at night? What are their biggest challenges and pain points? What do they wish they could change about their organization? And then it's impact questions, right? So the situation is the S, the P is the problem, I is impact. So what is the impact of those staying the same, right? So what is that costing you? What is it costing you in terms of your employee experience? What is it costing you about in terms of customer retention, revenue, profitability? Like, talk to me, like, what is the problem? Not just the problem, like, what is the impact of that problem? And then once you get them down this kind of road to like, oh, like just, you'll see the body language will change, they'll cringe up. And once you get to that real kind of impasse and keep digging, like you got to kind of twist the knife a little bit. You got to really get them feeling the pain of staying the same. And it's not manipulation, it's the truth. You just need to ask 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 layers deep to really get to that point. Because sometimes they'll say, no, it's not a problem. No, it's not a problem. That's maybe true. Maybe you're talking to the wrong person. If they don't have a problem, you know, you might want to just, if you really ask a million questions and there's no problem, right, you're probably talking to the wrong person. That's something I have come to believe at this point, is or they just don't trust you, and they probably won't trust you, right? So it's one of those things where you know when to like cut your losses and don't keep chasing somebody that doesn't want help. Everybody wants to, people need to want to help themselves in business and in life in general, right? And so I think the prospecting, once you get to that pain point, if they share a lot of pain, then I just switch to the N, which stands for need payoff. And that's, okay, so fixing this problem. Let's fast forward. Let's say you fix this. What does life look like for you personally? What's in it for you? What's a win for you? What would fixing this mean to you? Mean to your bonus, for example, mean to how you measured. How are you measured, right? Understanding how people are measured. What would it mean to your team? What would it mean to your employees, to your customers, to your boss, right? And get them thinking, oh, now you've taken this like pain, you've shifted it into this like nirvana state of like imagining and visioning and helping them. Yeah. The true art of a master salesperson, the best of the best. And I'm certainly not going to speak and say I'm the best at this, but I'm working on it and I'm practicing. And the true art is to help take people down this emotional journey where you can show them a better path and make them believe in themselves and believe that change is possible. And then you are the one who take them to this like chosen path, right? And I'll show you something that's sitting on my desk right now, because it sticks with me. There was a guy named David Lee, and we were doing a vision workshop. We do these vision workshops is what we call them. It's our process. It's like helping clients imagine what's possible and see into kind of a future state. And we literally have a whole team of experts, design thinkers that specialize in this. So I'll bring in my team. I'm not the one who just facilitates that. I'll bring in my team. When I have a client that says, yes, I want help, I will bring my team. We'll do a vision workshop. We call it a V2 mom, and we'll help people imagine, you know, what's possible. Vision, V2MOM stands for vision, values, methods, obstacles, and metrics. We will go through all five of those things. What's your vision? What are your values as an organization, right? What are the methods that you're going to do to achieve your vision? What are the obstacles, the challenges, pain points that you're dealing with that you'll need to solve to get there? And then what are the metrics? What are the success measures?
So if say we one do more this time, successfully. V2.
V number two, because you're saying V twice, right?
So values.
Vision, values, methods, obstacles, metrics. And actually, this can apply to any conversation in business, in any B2B, and B2C, for example. Yeah. If you Google just Salesforce V2 Mom process, there's a whole bunch of free trainings on how to like run this V2 Mom type workshop. It's super effective. There's a guy I work with, his name's Noah Flower. He's fantastic. He's a consultant, and he's kind of one of my right-hand people. So first we start this workshop, and then we do a lot more discovery. We get their vision, and we understand like what systems they're using, what challenges they have, what their people looks like. We literally shadow their people that are going to be using our software to see how much pain they have and having to manage their day with inefficient processes and spreadsheets. And then we'll come and have our engineering team build a future state model. Here's what life will look like with Salesforce. Here's how we solve the problem. It's not just saying, hey, what's your problem? And then not having a solution. It's us bridging the gap. And here's what Salesforce can do to, you know, solve your problem. Here's what your world will look like. We'll build a custom demo to show how our software would look like in their environment. And then we'll bring in a implementation partner and say, okay, now to make this started and kind of Salesforce is like a suit. You have to tailor it to each company, to each business, so that it can help with their specific processes. And then we'll have, hey, here's an implementation partner that's going to set this up for you, and here's how long it'll take. And then we'll show an ROI. We'll show a business return on investment, saying, you know, because you can do all this stuff, and they say, great, but then it's like, show me the money. It's almost like helping them navigate within their world on. If you're really good at selling, you can help people get to the emotional journey where they believe in themselves, and then you can help them sell this internally. I don't want to be selling. I want my customers to be selling for me. Okay. So if I can have my, we call it a change agent or an executive sponsor, go and pitch this to the CEO, and I can give them the deck. I can give them the business case. I can give them all the documentation they need, a sizzle video of what we're going to do. I will empower them with all this stuff, right? And ideally let them socialize it internally. And it's just so much more effective than me doing a pitch, right? When they're doing it for themselves. So that's the sign of another like really, really good salesman, is when you can go in and empower your customers to be good salespeople, right? So
this is more like a lesson for me. You know, I do software sales essentially now. I have a couple softwares, and all of my stuff's B2B. I'm selling the university is kind of our frequent product that we sell. And it's so funny you say this, because I'm like, wow, I could optimize this and I can make this. And this is what I'm doing this all backwards. And it's like, geez, like, you know, it's funny because, you know, the way that you're talking about vision crafting and figuring out what their methods and their obstacles are and really catering this custom use case in their environment. Like, you know, it's so funny because, you know, you're speaking to me because I'm doing the B2B right now and selling this, you know, vanilla or the university or Recruit-O-Matic or different softwares that I have. But it's funny, I'm like talking about the implementation of this into just a simple pitch. And it's kind of like, it's so fact-finding. It's like, okay, typically, you know, let's say I'm selling solar. It's kind of like, what's your vision? What's your values? Like, do you truly value the utility company? You know what I mean? It's like, do you truly value the fact that they're a monopoly and they're getting their resources from coal and bad energy? Like, is that really part of your core value? And are you aligned with that? And then it's like, imagine a world where, you know, it's all renewable. Imagine a renewable where we don't have to worry about all this pollution and this and that. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm like thinking through like how people can really micro level just as much as you're doing it on a macro level. And it's really cool.
Yeah. What you're doing is you're tapping into what's the most important thing in sales, which is helping the customer tap into their vision, help them feel into their why, and asking powerful questions. You can up-level your questions to get them thinking about things differently.
Well, because I think oftentimes people don't know their own vision. A customer is like just living day by day. And to them, they're like, oh, here's some sales pitch, blah, blah. But if you can correlate this to what the customer's truly aligned with by bringing up their alignment and their vision and, you know, understanding them, I think it's almost like they walk away like, did I just go through some self-improvement course? Did I just hire Tony Robbins to sell me? Like, you know,
totally. It's so true though. I mean, it's like the V2 mom, that process, yes. You didn't hear a thing about our software. There wasn't a thing about it. There's a reason we do it. It's because people don't change unless they have a strong vision, unless they believe it's possible, unless they get everyone together. We get every department in the room for those V2 mom sessions, and it's amazing. A lot of times they've never even talked about this stuff, right?
Yeah.
They're just so busy running the business and upside down. It's like, take a step back so you can take 10 steps forward, right? And that's what this is all about. So the thing I pulled off my wall is a picture of me in a cape. And to provide a little bit of context for this, we were doing one of these V2 mom sessions, and you know, I didn't know anyone in the room or barely knew them. And the icebreaker for it was like, draw the person next to you and draw a symbol of what you believe about them, something that symbolizes who they are. And this guy I didn't even know drew a cape on my back. And when we explained why we did that, he said, because you're the one who's going to lead us. You're going to lead us to this, you know, the future state. You're going to take us and fly us into, you know, our innovative world. And I was like, holy shit. This is like, I am so, I mean, it was just like validation, like knowing your impact, knowing and thinking about what you do in the sense of like you're truly serving and you're truly helping. That has been the biggest game changer of my career. The past 2 years since I, you know, joined Abundant and is in the mastermind with you, I just shifted. What I thought sales was hitting a quota. I thought it was grinding every month. I thought it was just like, you know, making commissions and helping get pen on paper. And it's not. It's taking people to a place that's leaving them better than when they met you. And that's, I think, something that every salespeople needs to hear. Every salesperson needs to know what you do matters. You're truly helping people. If you can't come to terms with that, your customers won't do it in a million years, because that's how you show up. And they'll see that and they'll say, well, this person really cares about my business. They're asking powerful questions. And you know what? You're not attached to the outcome of the sale, because if they don't want to help themselves, big deal. There's plenty of people who do. So this to me was like, wow, you know, I really do have these, you know, superpowers to take clients to this better place. And it's just like been a journey, you know. I'm very much in the middle of this journey, and me being on this podcast is just part of me kind of stepping into my next level of leadership, which is embracing, you know, what I know and teaching it and inspiring people. Because I'm not like this, I listen to so many podcasts with like superhumans and people that are just, you know, doing everything at such a high performer. And that's not me. I'm the normal guy who puts in the work, who is ADD, who has the bad habits. And I have very much built an amazing life for myself by being intentional, by working on myself, by trying to embrace my strengths and, you know, neutralize my weaknesses. And I'm still very much doing it. And I think I'm just scratching the surface on what my personal potential is. But to get to like number one rep at Salesforce and such an amazing company selling this way, I am such a believer that it works. You know, being able to tap into a client's potential and help them see what they didn't see before they met you, it's like every time. I mean, every time when you're with the right person, you're not selling. It doesn't feel like selling, right? It truly does feel like service. So I'm all about it.
Amen. Amen. Can I get a freaking hallelujah? No, but it's so powerful. I'm so glad you kind of finished with that, because the reality is so often we just get so caught up in like, I'm just slinging deals. It's like, no, I'm leaving people better than they found them through my product or service. And I love that. So I'm sure. Curious, what's the next journey? Let's end on this. Like, where's what's next for Ian? Like, where's your journey taking you? We've kind of chatted throughout the last couple months on this, but I mean, what's next? Yeah, what's your vision?
Yeah. So for anyone watching this, if you like what I said and you want to have more or learn more, I just started an Instagram account a couple weeks ago. So I've committed. My next journey is I'm turning 40. In like a week. And it's a big deal for me. You know, I kind of like this whole first 40 years has been about me, about the money, about kind of slaying the dragons. And I got a beautiful family, you know, own a couple houses, made boatloads of money. And now it's like, okay, what really matters? And for me, it's about impact, right? It's about how can I serve others? How can I impact others? And that goes in a couple manners. Number one, it's staying where I am right now in Salesforce and selling this way every day, showing up with maximum income impact to my customers, to my team, leading myself through, you know, I won't say elimination, but awareness and minimizing of the habits that, you know, prevent me from really, you know, blowing up, right? So I think I'm just, again, very much on the self-development journey and making sure that I'm continuing to be the best person that I can be, so I can be the best salesperson, the best husband, the best father, the best leader, right? So that's number one, is just stay the path of self-development. Number two is serve others. So I started this Instagram account, Ian Koniak. You can share it on your podcast, but you just search Ian Koniak on Instagram. Every day I'm posting a video, and I'm doing it for 365 days. It's a 1-minute video with a tip that ultimately I hope, and I've gotten great feedback. We're up to 2,000 followers in just 2 weeks, right? So for me, it's really just about sharing what I know to be true from my own experience, right? This isn't, again, trying to change the world. It's little things. So, you know, for me, it's really, there's a few things I'm sharing. One is sales. The other is really around mindset, transformation, gratitude, and being thankful for what you have, going through, and the value of like hard work and like the grind, right? So there's kind of different themes that I have set up, but I'm doing that, which actually takes more time than I thought it would, because it's all original content and, you know, it's consistency. Some days I just don't feel like doing it, but I still do it because that's the commitment I made to my audience and to myself. So I'm just starting that journey. And part of that's also just appearing on podcasts and also doing some, you know, speaking at engagements where I can. So it's kind of like the commitment to service. And then I think my biggest kind of long-term vision is I'd love to, at some point in my career, be able to, you know, to have some type of course, right? Some type of training program on B2B sales. And also just from a pure, like, shifting your mindset. Like, we didn't get into all the personal stuff, but I've had a lot of struggles, right? I've struggled with addiction. I've struggled with ADD. I've struggled with like terrible, just self-belief. And a lot of this stuff has really shifted for me, and it's taken a while. It's taken, you know, it's been kind of a compounding effect. As I continue to lead myself to better places, I get more confidence and I make bigger commitments, right? So I feel like my purpose, my God-given purpose on this earth, on this universe, is to really serve others and be kind of the voice of the everyday person, the person that has these struggles, the person that can, you know, take something that is really, really hard and turn it into something really good. Cause I've had just a lot of adversity in my life. And, you know, I don't know what that looks like, Sam, right now. It's not me leaving Salesforce, that's for sure, because I have a wonderful job and it's supporting my family. And, but it is me taking more and more, of a path to serving others and to leading and kind of publicly sharing what I know. And if it gets to a point where it's like, you know, this is my calling and I can't be, you know, in my full-time job anymore, I have to be full-time where I'm leading and inspiring and doing speaking or, you know, running programs, then I figure I'll answer that call and I'll know it when the time arises. But right now it's just me kind of stepping into this bigger role of giving back and sharing, you know, sharing what I believe can make every single person, whether you're an entrepreneur or a salesperson or just a human in general, like better because of these universal laws of humanity that I'm dealing with and that I think a lot of people are dealing with.
I love it. Love it. Well, Ian, I appreciate the relationship we have, and I'm excited to support you in that journey. And I appreciate you showing up fully and willing to give and share full hearted on this podcast. So thank you so much for being on the show, my man. This was awesome. Some fun nuggets. So appreciate it.
I want to thank you for blazing the trail, man, for what you were doing 2 years ago to now, and for just leading a path in where nothing existed before, for getting the whole B2D space, where the podcast that you're doing, for the coaching program, the university. You are just a man of many talents, and it really is an inspiration for me to see somebody like you just go for it in spite of, you know, being comfortable and, you know, having all the things, the assurances in your previous role, to kind of step full force into that and make some sacrifices. It's just really cool to see, you know, what you're doing to lead your industry. And I'm proud of you too, man.
Appreciate it, my man. Appreciate it. Okay. Much love. Talk to you soon, my man.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.